So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 4, entitled Sati Quits Her Body, text number 2. Suriddhidriksha pratigata durmana snehatruda diasru kaliti vivala babam bhavanya pratipurusham rusa pradakshati vivaikshata jata vipatu. Suriddhidriksha, of the desire to see her relatives. Pratigata, the prevention. Durmanaha, feeling sorry. Sneha, from affection. Rudati, crying. Asrukala, by drops of tears. Ativivala, very much afflicted. Bhavam, Lord Shiva. Bhavani, Sati. Apratipurusham, without an equal or rival. Rusha, with anger. Pradakshati, to blast. Eva, as if. Aiksata, looked at. Jatavepatu, shaking. Translation. Sati felt very sorry at being forbidden to go see her relatives at her father's house, and due to affection for them, tears fell from her eyes. Shaking, very much afflicted, she looked at her uncommon husband, Lord Shiva, as if she were going to blast him with her vision. Purport. The word apratipurusham, used in this verse, means one who has no equal. Lord Shiva has no equal in the material world in regard to equality towards everyone. His wife, Sati, knew that her husband was equal towards everyone. So why in this case was he so unkind to his wife that he did not allow her to go to her father's house? This distressed her more than she could tolerate, and she looked at her husband as if she were ready to blast him with her vision. In other words, since Lord Shiva is the Atma, Shiva also means Atma, it is indicated here that Sati was prepared to commit suicide. Another meaning of the word apratipurusa is the personality who has no rival. Since Lord Shiva could not be persuaded to give her permission, Sati took shelter of a woman's last weapon, weeping, which forces a husband to agree to the proposal of his wife. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Ginnana Salakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gauri. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sorry about that. There is a lot of misdirected energy in the material world. And the result is so much waste of time. Here Sati gets caught up into strong emotional experiences about matters which in themselves have no real importance. Whether she would go see her relatives or not was such a trivial thing, actually. Because even the relationships with our relatives are trivial in their nature, not important. Because all these things are very temporary. How long is this span of life? And if we're looking at this particular birth that we are having at present, in the perspective of the unlimited number of births that we are taking in the material world, and if we're realizing that life after life, we are missing the opportunity to go back to Godhead, then in this lifetime, the concerns that Sati had seem to be unimportant. And the fact that she was so overwhelmed shows the nature of material attachment. How one loses the perspective, how one gets unduly attached to anything in this world without seeing it in its perspective of what its value is to make progress towards the goal of life. Everything we do should be simply for making progress towards the goal of life, to go back to Godhead. So all the other things that we are doing in this world to satisfy personal desires is actually not very important if these personal desires cannot be purified in the service of Krishna. If we always want to engage in devotional service, in activities according to our liking, then we come to the platform of karma yoga or karma misra yoga, karma misra bhakti. Then our bhakti becomes mixed with fruitive desire. So when we are engaging in devotional service and we're concerned with fulfilling our personal desires in devotional service, then we're progressing slowly. To really become advanced means that we are looking beyond this world. Great devotees like Madhavendra Puri used to sometimes be oblivious to the world for 5-6 hours or more. They had no interest. They were absorbed in ecstatic love of God, always thinking of the Supreme Lord and seeing the ways of the world as insignificant. It is stated that we are meant to particularly engage in hearing and chanting. And if we do so, and if we engage in hearing and chanting, if we hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, then we are seeing descriptions of very transcendental personalities who were very attached to the Supreme Lord and not so much concerned with the ways of the world. So this is ultimately becoming more and more prominent for every devotee. Some are beginning devotional service while being conditioned in a very strong way, and therefore it is very difficult to act in ways that are not according to one's own desire relating to the material energy. So even while in devotional service, there is a lot of concern about material things and material life. But gradually, this concern has to be overcome. In this whole narration, we're seeing that Sati was unduly attached. And this particular aspect of the narration, that is the main point. She was acting out of proportion. She had lost the balance. She had forgotten that ultimately Krishna is more important, and in her case, Lord Shiva was more important because he is the representative of Krishna. So that she could not manage. And the result was that she became very upset. She became angry with Lord Shiva. She became, she started to cry, and all these things, which were detrimental to spiritual advancement. So that is the warning, that we must be very careful in not falling prey to all kinds of emotions like that are simply distracting us from our devotional service. What does it matter? In the Lilamrita, we're seeing a description of Steve, who later became Satsarup Maharaj, and he spoke to his father on the telephone about how he got involved with this Swamiji from the Lower East Side, and that he was going to take initiation from this Swamiji. And his parents were not at all favorable. In fact, they were so unfavorable, they said that if you, you'll have to make a choice. Either you choose for that, or you choose for us, basically. And if you choose for that spiritual life of yours, then you don't have to come back home. Right? And he said, what to do? What can I do? And that was it. He never went back home. So we see that sometimes devotees are displaying great detachment. That is actually normal. Great detachment may appear to be extraordinary, may sometimes appear to be inhuman, may sometimes appear to be just cold and hard-hearted. But it is a fact that we are not human, right? It is a fact that we are spirit souls, and that what we have to do with this present human existence, which is simply a face, it is simply a temporary state of being. We don't belong in these material bodies, but rather it is described that we have eternal, effulgent bodies, made of pure transcendental consciousness, full of bliss, full of knowledge, and full of ecstasy, Sat Chit Anand. So how can we be so concerned about being human? Being human is nothing to be proud of, nothing to be attached to. It doesn't have very much value, right? Because it actually means that which is dictated by the body, right? Being dog means being controlled by the dog body. Being human means being controlled by the human body and the human dictates. So, ultimately, we have to, Krishna consciousness is the process where we have to totally change our value system. It is that process which Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes is not an adjustment, nor is it an addition to our life, Krishna consciousness. It is a total revolution. It's a complete change. So it is not that we just are who we are, and we have the needs we have, and then we would also like to be Krishna conscious, and we add, therefore, Krishna consciousness to who we are and what we are, and we will stay like that. That is not the idea. The idea, actually, is to make a total change, a total revolution. That can be done very slowly and very gradually, or it can be done very quickly. But this is actually spiritual life. So, therefore, vairagya, vidya, nidya, bhakti, yogam, this renunciation and detachment is very much central in spiritual life. And Sati was lacking it. She did not have it. Lord Shiva was very, very renounced and detached. Lord Shiva is simply living under a tree, is meditating upon the Supreme Lord. And Lord Shiva has no particular interest in anything material. But Sati was not able to display the same consciousness as that Lord Shiva had, because she was attached, materially attached. Attached to her father because he had treated her with kindness and affection and attention when she was young. Therefore, she was attached. One may say, well, is that wrong? Isn't it ungrateful if one would have no appreciation for all the kindness given by one's parents? Shouldn't one? And do the Vedas not describe that one should have, should care for the parents, and that it is even one's duty, karmically speaking, and that if one is not responsible for the needs of one's parents, that one will suffer reactions? Yes, but these are the lower injunctions in the Vedas that govern principles of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, or mundane religious principles that regulate mundane life, which bring people to the mode of goodness. But if we take to complete transcendental life, then devarsibhutaptininam pitrinam nakinkuru nayamrinisarajam, then we are liberated from all other duties, from duties to the devas, to the rishis, to the forefathers, to children. In this way, we are totally relieved from all responsibilities other than the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. And that is the point. So Sati should not have worried about it. She should have just, along with her husband, focused on the Supreme Lord. But she could not. The next few verses will deal more with the emotional state. Quite recognizable, we can also find situations where we become upset about things that are happening. We become upset with people. But we see that Bhagavatam shows personalities and who did not become upset at all and glorifies these personalities. Like Jad Bharat, who was mistreated by his brothers in particular. Jad Bharat had in a previous two lives been Bharat Maharaj, who was in the forest and who had performed austerities, but then became attached to the deer, and in the next life became a deer. So in the third birth, when he became Jad Bharat, then Jad Bharat decided that he did not want to in any way again become attached to the material world. And therefore he was very careful and decided not to become involved in social affairs at all. And therefore socially he was not able to function properly. He did not follow any rules of social behavior. So he did it all wrong. He was not polite. He didn't learn all these kind of rules. He didn't learn how to wash the hands before eating or other. He just did everything at the wrong moment as if he didn't understood. So people thought he is a little bit retarded. But that was his strategy, to just act as if he was a fool so that no one would give him any attention and would leave him alone. And he was mistreated by his brothers. His father was affectionate, but when his father died, then the brothers started to give him very poor facility and so on. They gave him burned rice scraped from the bottom of the pot, all black, and he would just eat it. He would not consider anything. He would just accept. So an exceptional personality, exceptionally detached, exceptionally renounced, which is glorified in the Bhagavatam as he was a transcendental personality. So to be a devotee is not an ordinary thing. To take up bhakti yoga is not at all an ordinary challenge. And actually it is meant that we are going to do it, that we are going to change bit by bit. And that is part of this spiritual life. It means that our whole attitude has to change, because previously our mood has been that we don't want to change, that we are what we are, and whatever society has to say about that, that's not our concern, that's their problem. We are what we are, and we're going to do what we are doing. But now, in spiritual life, we are meant to become surrendered. Not just surrendered to verses from the Bhagavad Gita, but also surrendered to the will of the Vaishnavas. And that is the most difficult thing, to let other people, to allow them a say in what we're going to do in our life, and to allow them to govern our life. But that is part of Krishna consciousness. It's difficult because it may not always work. We are in the material world. One cannot just surrender to everything people of the village want. In villages, people are very narrow-minded, nothing allowed. If you do everything the village people want, then what will you become? So you have to rebel, right? You have to do what you want and just forget about these people. But in spiritual life, right, we live in the village of sadhu sangha, of the association of the devotees, saintly people who are the living representatives of transcendental knowledge. And therefore we have to submit to the will of the Vaishnavas. Right? Very difficult. But everyone has to do so. And we have to appreciate the advice of the Vaishnavas. Mm-hmm. So in this way, Sati became so overwhelmed with her own experience of reality that she relied more upon her own experience than on the experience of of a superior person like Lord Shiva. Although Lord Shiva was giving her instruction, she couldn't accept it because she was relying on her own experience. So obviously the purpose of these verses is for us to try and overcome the same tendency in us. That is the principal point of studying the mentality and behavior of sati, is that when we feel these urges coming up in us, that we are reminded of sati and say, it didn't go very well for sati. She wound up with suicide, right? It got out of control. So we cannot allow our emotional experiences to get out of control. We must somehow or other work according to the directions of the Vaishnavas, of the scriptures, and so on. Then we can... because our business is to go back to Godhead and nothing else. And that's what it should be. And if our business is not going back to Godhead exclusively, then we are in Maya. Right? Then we are in illusion. Then we think that things will make us happy that actually will not make us happy. That is Maya. Maya means that we are firmly convinced that something will make us happy which will not make us happy. That is Maya. Yeah. So that is foolishness. So Maya makes us foolish. The illusory energy bewilders the mind, and we begin to think that so many material things can be the source of great happiness, but the reality is that they cannot. Only Krishna and only devotional service to Krishna can make us happy. So that's what we have to keep in mind as our vision, and that is what we should cultivate, and somehow or other that will make us successful in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So this is the test. This is the test that everyone has to pass. And therefore, this means that everyone again and again will be confronted with his attachments that are not favorable for going back to Godhead. And that at time, we have to be prepared to make big sacrifices. And even after we've made so many sacrifices, it's never enough, because the sacrifices are not being made to get a reward. If you make sacrifice to get a reward, then it counts how many sacrifices you've already made. I've made 100 sacrifices now, right? 100, you know. I mean, 100 times I sacrificed. Am I going to get a reward or what? No, not yet. Okay. Okay, 500 I've made now. Am I getting my reward or what? Am I now going to get some recognition for all this? Still no recognition. 1,000 sacrifices I've made. By now, I should get some recognition. That is the material approach, where we're adding up what we have done. But in this sacrificing of our self-interest for the interest of Krishna, it doesn't count what we have sacrificed, it counts what we have not sacrificed. Yeah. So one cannot say, I've already sacrificed 1,000 times. What counts is what we have not yet sacrificed, because that will hold us back. Yeah. Therefore one can never think, well, now I've sacrificed enough, 3,000 times, right? That's enough. That's enough for this lifetime. I deserve to relax a little now, yeah, and rest on my laurels, right? I can have my trophies for all my great achievements, and everyone can see my history, and everyone can see what I have done, right? No, It's not what is given. It is appreciated by Krishna, but it's not enough to go back to Godhead. When still independent self-interest is maintained. When still we are attached to fruitive activity. When we are still wanting the fruits of our labor for ourselves, then it doesn't matter how many times we surrendered. It's still what we did not surrender that we have to sacrifice. So in this way, we cannot expect that at any point in time we have an easy task. The surrender to the Lord is very great. However, as we are surrendering more and more, we are becoming more and more detached from material things, therefore no longer disturbed by all the unnecessary anxieties of material life, and we become more and more blissful in our Krishna consciousness, and therefore more and more motivated to make advancement. When we are blissful, then we can do so many things. But if we are not blissful in Krishna consciousness, then it's difficult to do so many things. Then it all becomes austerity. But when it is very blissful, then it is nectar. Therefore, Kavi Karnapur, the great poet and son of Sivananda Sen, stated that there are two types of devotional service, two types of bhakti. Bhakti with nectar and bhakti without nectar. And he said like this, bhakti without nectar, it doesn't go very far. It doesn't go very far. So it's the bhakti with nectar, which will evolve into Krishna prema, into love of God. Therefore, we must find this bhakti with nectar. So bhakti with nectar is only available. It sounds like strawberries with cream, doesn't it? You know, bhakti is in itself, bhakti. But now we're talking about bhakti with nectar. You know, strawberries with cream. Yes. So this bhakti with nectar is what we need. And it can be found if first of all we let go of all our false material attachments relating to our body. Right. It is a big, big thing. So, in order to come to that nectar, first, some real sacrifice has to be made. And that is the austerity. But then one can actually come to bhakti with nectar, where one's devotional service becomes deeply inspired, and that's what we want, because from that point on it goes to love of God. So we can look at sati as a prototype of tendencies within ourselves that we are supposed to control, supposed to conquer by being detached and not concerned so much with the needs of the body, with the relationships to the body. You know, if someone says, you know, like something bad about our nationality, we cannot get upset about it, you know. Indians are useless, you know. Dutch are just like cheeseheads, right? Israelis are fanatics. Yugoslavs are just troublemakers, right? And, you know, in this way, we can go around the world and say something. Japanese are kamikazes, right? You know, what can you say? You can, but... So we can, it is funny, Because when it is said, right, we feel a little bit, offended. Right? It's like, wow, you know. But why? Right? Because we are not Indian. We are not Yugoslavian, Japanese, or Israeli, or Dutch, or whatever. We have nothing to do with that. Absolutely nothing. Right? So it's just a little test, you know, just a little test to see that, we're not fully free from this bodily attachment. Yeah? It is, you know, and I say, Indians, you know, but what, you know, what Indians, right? Indians. And immediately, all the Indians get angry. Right? But we Vaishnavas will say, let the Indians get angry, but Vaishnavas will not get angry. Because Vaishnavas are not Indians. So this is the, it is a very exalted platform. Therefore, what is called Krishna consciousness is never ever cheap, is never ever easy, is never free from great endeavor. What we have started, right, this process of devotional service requires really a tremendous, tremendous endeavor to fight with ourselves. And if we are not doing that, if we are not ready to take on the fight with ourselves, then we will stick to our own limitations, which we know very well that we have, for the rest of our life, by saying, what can I do? And life then just goes by. And then at the end of life, yes, we'll have made some advancement, but we have not reached the goal of life. And we may not attain success in this life and go back to Godhead. So therefore, we need to really do what the scripture says. Do what the acharyas say. Beat the mind with a stick and a shoe. Bhagavad Gita also points out that the mind is to be considered our enemy. As long as we are in the conditioned state, mind is the enemy. That means the mind is to be ignored. Thinking, feeling, and willing, the functions of the mind, are to be controlled and many times ignored. And instead, we have to redirect our thinking and feeling and willing according to the standards of the scriptures, which are pointing at Lord Krishna and devotional service to him. So that's what it takes to be part of this movement. It's not an ordinary thing to be part of this movement. And one cannot say, well, it's too much. It's too much. Because then we're back again at that same equation that I made. 1,000 sacrifices, 2,000 sacrifices, 3,000 sacrifices, 4,000 sacrifices, too much. Now 4,001 is too much, right? So many sacrifices I will not make. That's too much. Now we've come to a sacrifice which is beyond me. But actually, there can be no sacrifice that is beyond us. There is no sacrifice that is beyond us when it comes to sacrificing our dependence on material energy, our emotional attachment to the material energy. So therefore, Sati was saying, it's too much. Now it concerns my father. Lord Shiva may be preaching very nice philosophy. Very nice philosophy. Certainly does. And I cannot deny that it is, that he speaks from Vedic literatures and so on. But now we are in real life and this is my father. This is my father. So this is different. No, it's not. It's exactly what this Bhagavatam was written for our fathers and our mothers and our children and our countrymen and our birth. It is exactly for these things that it was written. Right? For our real emotions in our life, not for the emotions that are described on a piece of paper. One can easily read, undo family attachment, da-da-da-da-da. You can read a whole page about it. Right? Very good. And you can read, this is not favorable for spiritual life. Very nice. But then you turn around and then there's your family. You say, well, that's something different, This is like my family and there's a special situation. My mother is 399 years old, My little sister is only, 3 days old and very, very helpless. And my old mother cannot take care of her. See, we have an extraordinary family situation. What do you do? With a mother of 399 years old and a sister of 3 days old. You can understand. Our family is different. It sounds different. Right? But there is no exception. There is no exception, actually. We must simply see, put it all in place according to the standards of scripture. And that was what Lord Shiva was pointing out. And Sati couldn't do it. Sati couldn't do it. She thought, no, my relationship with my father is different. This is a different situation because it's my father and we have that special relationship. Therefore, I cannot deny this relationship. So how can Lord Shiva tell me not to go? He cannot tell me not to go. This is not possible. How can he deny this special intimate relationship I have? I'm the pet child of my father. And he has many daughters, many, many. But amongst all of them, I'm his favorite. I've always been his favorite. We have a very intimate relationship. What is between me and my father is not like what ordinarily goes on between a father and a daughter. We have a very deep personal understanding. We're very, very close. That was what Sati was experiencing. And therefore, she could not possibly emotionally accept it. This good instruction, of which she knew with her intelligence that it was good instruction. But she could not accept it. So she gave too much importance to the emotion. Too much importance to the relationship. That is the point. And we do the same. We can easily, if we ask, write down 5 relationships that you have with people in this world to which you give too much importance. Right? Actually, more importance than is helpful for going back to Godhead. Right? Knowing that these relationships are not really so helpful for going back to Godhead. Then, why worry? So this is the spirit that Bhagavatam is calling for. It's a very high platform, I'm aware of that, from where we are. But this is ultimately the spiritual platform. The platform of 100% surrender and no less. You cannot speak of surrender unless it's 100%. Where is surrender? If it's, I'm 90% surrendered. Can you please close the door? I'm 90% surrendered. Can you please surrender the other 10% as well and close the door? 90% means you maybe stop somewhere 1 meter before the door. Right? We walk to the door, but we don't the hand may be above the doorknob, but we don't finally close it because we're not 100% surrendered. So therefore, we have to close the door on material life to go back to Godhead. If we keep the door of material life a little bit open, right, then we are not 100% eligible to go back to Godhead. Then we are in Maya. Then we are fools. Then we are wasting our human form of life. What are we doing? We're supposed to go back to Godhead. What else are we doing? What else are we doing it for? What else are we here for? What else have we become involved in this process for? That is basically what is the underlying message of this whole narration, where Lord Shiva is dealing with Sati in her her distressed, unbalanced state of mind. Finally, Sati will commit suicide, which is already indicated in this particular verse, in certain, in some of the words. So that is suicide is not an authorized activity. There were some exceptions. It is said in scripture that a sannyasi who fell down and who would enter into the Triveni or the confluence of the holy rivers in Prayag was absolved from his offense. Right. So, what can be said there? But otherwise, we find that suicide is condemned. So, to let material life come to such a point that we become so overwhelmed by what goes on is the greatest, that we are considering suicide is great foolishness. Because what is this material world? A pandemonium, right? It is just some awkward, absurd arrangement. In the French existentialist philosophers came up with this concept, right, that material life is absurd. And if we are looking at different philosophers, we can find elements of truth in what they say. So there's an element of truth in it. Of course, they went as far as to say there was no purpose in life. We say there is a purpose in life. But on the material plane, actually, we're just getting absorbed in all kinds of absurd, absurd relationships, false relationships. Relationships with our nation, relationships with our house, relationships with the place of birth. This is my place of birth. My roots are here, you know. This is like, this is where I belong. What do you mean, you know? What do you mean, you know? Your roots are here, right? I mean, you know, you don't have any roots, you know. You're not a tree, right? You don't have roots. You don't belong in this material world. We don't belong in this material world at all. We have nothing to do with this place. Nothing. We have no roots anywhere in the material world. Not on Mars, not on the moon, not on planet Earth. Nowhere. Not in any place. The place of our birth has no meaning at all. It's just another place, right? Just another place. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had some earth from the birthplace of his spiritual master, and every day he would eat a little bit. That's another thing. That's another thing. But recently, Mahavishnu Swami made me eat some earth from the birthplace of Srila Prabhupada. Okay, for breakfast. Crunch, crunch. So, what can we do? These things are are so deeply ingrained in our thought pattern, etc. So we have to come at least to this vision that full surrender is what is required, and that we have to go all the way in whatever it takes. It takes. And therefore, whatever we've done in spiritual life, whatever we've already surrendered to, there's always more. There's always more. It's never enough. Right? It may seem ungrateful, right? You've done so much, and now they're still on your case, right? But this is how it is, right? Because it's never enough, right? We have to, surrender 100%. And Prabhupada said that if there was any reason to his success, then that was that he 100% surrendered to the order of his spiritual master. Okay, now I'll stop and see if there are any questions or comments.
Yes, got a question. Well, when it's the Tibhara Atma, the Krishna is in everybody's heart, how can you deny the needs of other people who rely on you just to please your own selfiness?
Yeah. It seems like that. It may appear like that. But it is not like that, because as you're going back to Godhead, you become also an instrument of the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So as you're turning away from your material dependents, right, who are dependent to bodily relationships, as you turn away from them and you turn to Krishna, you'll become the recipient of Krishna's mercy, and in that way, you will be able to benedict so many people. So you'll become like a living, you become the embodiment of mercy, a living channel of mercy. And therefore, you'll be actually, your whole existence will become much more beneficial for the world than it is if we are trying to take care of a few dependents. So, actually these dependents are not dependent on us. And actually, we cannot do anything for our dependents. It is said in Bhagavatam 2nd Canto, Atmasanyesu asatsu api, which means that we are depending on fallible soldiers. What can they do? They also will die. We are dependent on family members who are just like us, also as fallible as we are. So they're illusory protectors. So we ourselves are illusory protectors, because we cannot protect anyone, actually, because we are fully dependent ourselves. Therefore, the only real dependence can be on the Supreme Lord. And if we depend on the Supreme Lord, then all those who are so-called dependents also become, are turned over to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, one simply turns to the Lord, and one places all those dependents under the care of the Supreme Lord. And the more the Supreme Lord becomes pleased with our service, the more all those dependents will also getting the blessings of the Lord, because the Lord, how can he not be kind to those that are dear to him? The Lord is a person. But that is the principle. So the principle of looking after dependents in this world, and then giving that up for going back to Godhead, is not irresponsible or selfish, but it's taking on greater mercy, becoming like a greater instrument of mercy. Instead of going for the small mercy, now one becomes an instrument of the big mercy. That's the idea. So that argument is rejected.
Maharaj, one might be very detached outwardly to the family and react very cold and like, oh, I don't have anything to do with you not much. But inwardly, actually being very detached. And the other way around is also possible.
Let's stick with one, otherwise it gets too complex. One may be outwardly very detached and inwardly very attached, to say it in simple language. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Now you're going into the realm of communications, right? Communications. Not preaching, communications. Yeah, okay. It depends, you know. In some of these things, some strictness is not inappropriate, right? This lecture is not a lecture that the purport of this lecture is not that one should never go back to his parents and never speak to them again. Right? That was not the purport of the lecture. The purport of the lecture was that we have to overcome all material attachments, right? And only engage in activities that are favorable for Krishna. Now, in the case of Sati, the parental relationship is unfavorable, very unfavorable for spiritual life. If the parents are favorable in Krishna, and if Krishna consciousness is part of the relationship, then the relationship is okay. But if the relationship is, if there's no spiritual advancement being made in that relationship, then it's not very valuable, right? So, for the sake of keeping the parents from not starting an anti-cult movement, right, as has happened in the past, right, when devotees were becoming so disinterested, right, in keeping contact with the parents, for the sake of not having anti-cult movements, etc., there may be communication techniques. Write a letter to your parents once a month and all that kind of stuff. Very nice. But the real thing is that if in life, from moment to moment, every moment is a moment of making spiritual advancement, right, then we are really properly situated. And if the relationship with the parents can be that, very good. Yeah. I don't think it's necessary to, for a brahmachari to get into the whole thing of kissing and, or being hugged by the mother, etc. I don't think it's required. I think it can be explained. And she will be a little difficult for her, maybe, but she'll get over it. You know, if you give some, other form of attention. Some strictness, I think, is certainly good. Yeah, I don't think it's necessary to compromise our Krishna conscious standards for the sake of satisfying worldly sentiments. Dangerous if we start doing that. Where does it begin? Where does it end? So I would not compromise on these things myself. And if the parents are very unfavorable, then I don't think it's necessary to keep intimate contact. If the parents are favorable, are open, then it can be nice. Then one can help them in advancing. But at least they can come to the point as to understanding why you're not going to be embraced, kissed, and why you are not eating the cooking in the house and all these things. I mean, all that has to be explained, you know, very affectionately, but also it has to be done. And it may hurt a little bit, but what can be done? You know, we can help them affectionately to understand it, but we cannot change the principles. So it's just a matter. You don't need to change these standards. We just need to affectionately explain it when it's difficult to accept for them. Then it makes it easier. It's the best we can do, I think.
Shouldn't you be an example for your parents and for those who are close to you by behavior? I mean, a little bit I understand by your words that you said, okay, you choose strictly for spiritual life and all the demands of your parents, the things they expect from you to take care of them or to help them, like he says, it hurts those people when you won't do so. And I think when Krishna is 100% mercy, 100% understanding, 100% love, he wants you just to be an uplifting example for them. And by your good behavior and your caring, I mean not becoming like them, no, just being an example for them by good behavior.
Yeah, but love doesn't need to be always expressed in the way that people want it, you see. Love doesn't mean that you have to simply give them everything they want. So it just means that you have to be kind to them. Yeah, but in some matters you may maintain your own standards and principles. Right? Now there are different people who are situated in different situations in life. He's a brahmachari, right? So he is a celibate monk. So for him, there may be different standards, right, than for a girl who is living in the world, right, and who may be more involved. And who practice Krishna consciousness in the world. So there are different standards. That's fine. But still, all these things, the gist of the lecture was, because the lecture was based on Sati's emotional state, right? And we kind of went a bit into the nature of her mood, and we could see that she was like giving too much importance to that whole relationship, yeah, and didn't because when the relationship was not favorable for spiritual advancement, right, she was not able to give it up. But that must be possible, right? When it's not favorable for spiritual advancement, then it's just a distraction. Yeah, it will slow us down in making advancement. Yeah. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, the sannyasi's position is the revered position. Right? That is the position that is considered to be like the highest, right? Because he is most serious in practical commitment and in taking a position for going back to Godhead. Yeah. So the other position, where one is so much absorbed in dealing with all kinds of worldly relationships with people, is a position which where one may become compromised in one's commitment to Krishna at times, yeah, for the sake of social interaction. And so in this way we become caught up in a whole network of compromises. Yeah. And that's actually the position in life of people. They're all caught up in a network of compromises, and that's called to be conditioned. Yeah. So if we see not as sannyasi, but if we see great exalted paramahansas, they were on another level, right? Just forgetting the world, oblivious to the world, totally oblivious, totally absorbed in just Krishna and everything else. So we're not like speaking from a platform of condemning anyone. See, this is the mistake that is made, is that when these kind of points are brought out, certain people feel that it condemns my way of life. Right? What is just being said here condemns my way of life. So how can I accept it? And I mean, it's very strong and very black and white. And you know, can't there be any gray? Right? Should it all be so so black and white? Like, isn't gray something more more natural? Isn't it more natural to sometimes bend and all this? So, well, you know, we want to go back to Godhead. Right? That is the point. And there's like, you can bend and bend and bend, but ultimately we have to go back to Godhead. So we have to be very careful about that. But it's not that we are condemning. There is a program for everyone in this world to engage in devotional service. And there's a next step that everyone can take to come closer. So it's not that this is the kind of lecture where anybody who is not up to that platform is condemned. And that the purport of the lecture is that get it together. You know, what are you waiting for? Right? I mean, bums, you know, don't you realize that you're in Maya and that you should be, that you should come up quick? That's not the purport of this lecture. The purport of the lecture is there is a standard of pure devotional service which we should try to understand better, which we should try to approach more, according to our own situation, our own pace, and so on. Yeah. So, though there is the human element is there, and we say like there is an opportunity for everyone to kind of step by step come up. But Varna Ashram allows that. Take your time. Right. But you know, at the end of life, yeah. Well, you know, then you get what you. You know, you get the result of your activities. That can't change, right? And we can't make that any cheaper, right? Going back to Godhead requires that we really did it. And if we didn't really go for it, we may not go. That's to be considered. What to say? Scriptures are making it clear that we should invest our energy in the eternal relationship with Krishna and not in the temporary relationships in this world, including family relationships. It may sound harsh, but ultimately, scriptures also make it clear that if we become spiritually very advanced, all the family members become benedicted, and much more so, the whole world becomes benedicted. Look at Srila Prabhupada, right? How many people did he benedict in the world? Right? He left his family. Oh, they were crying. The sons came many times to Prabhupada to say that the mother was in trouble and needed help, monetary help. Son came so many times that at one point Prabhupada said, okay, give him some money. You know, and that was not, see how great his influence is, how he has benedicted the whole world, right, in such a deep way. So how much greater he became, how much greater his family became, how much greater a person, how much greater, how much more merciful he became. He said he should have been merciful to his family. But he made so a much greater family. It was much more, his mercy was much greater. So that's the idea.
You said not to be identified, you know, with Israeli and Indian and Yugoslavian. Sometimes we find it that we, I mean, it says in Bhagavad Gita that the soul, some hear of it as amazing, some describe it as amazing, some see it as amazing, some others just can't understand. And this one is, I think, most of the time I just see it, maybe I can't understand. And then I saw the, I understand it is something so, not so wonderful. So I take shelter at the body, you know, because I need something strong. And,
Yeah, it's okay, you know. So we know that we are eternal spirit souls. We know that we are not the body. But meanwhile, we have one, and we also have a particular conditioning. Like, you know, it's easy to say I'm not Israeli, but then everyone else will say, you know, like, you're still Israeli because you're acting like an Israeli, you know, and it's easy to say you're not Dutch, but, like, you know, we are blunt like anything, so that's still Dutch, right? And Indian and so on. So we have still a particular conditioning according to the, and a certain karma, right? It's even more than conditioning that came after birth. There was already before birth a particular karma which made us take birth in that particular country. So something is there already, right? Even in the mentality from last life. And then in this life it has been reinforced by having grown up in that country. So obviously, we may have certain characteristics that are, that seem to be according to a particular nationality. But we are not that. We may use our experience in the service of Krishna. We may use our particular bodies, an Israeli body or a Dutch body or an Indian one in the service of Krishna. But, it's just a temporary situation. So we do have it. You really have an Israeli body. There's no doubt about it. It's definitely that, you know. And you really lived there for a certain amount, part of your life. You really have some Israeli karma, without a doubt. But, you know, on eternity, what is it? Right? So what's the significance of that on eternity? So for now, we use it. Our particular conditioning in the service of Krishna. But we are not that. We are eternal spirit souls.
And what if for my logic it's a little bit difficult to understand the soul is higher than, like, stronger than the body?
Soul is eternal. All energy comes from the soul. Without the soul, there's nothing that moves in the body. All movement stops. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it said that movement is a sign of life. All movement is a sign of life. So, without the soul, no more movement in the body. That's it. So it all comes from the soul. source of all energy. Okay, Avadhuta Roy Prabhu.
When you neglect somebody, that person can become hurt and can become angry. So in regarding to the mind, what you were saying that we shouldn't neglect the mind, what about that?
Yeah, so this is the harshness of renunciation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was 24 years old. He left his mother, who was a widow, and he left his 16-year-old wife, right? And just walked away. And they were not rich, right? They were not rich. Wasn't sure how they were going to, and not rich in Bengal means really not rich in Holland. It means different, not rich. It means, it wasn't even clear, at times where the next meal was going to come from. It is described that many times Mother Sachi didn't know, how to cook the next meal for Nimai. And then he would produce a tola of gold, a thumb, the size of a thumb of gold from nowhere. So who was going to provide now? For a widow and a 16-year-old wife. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just walked away, not caring for their sorrow. Right? So how is it possible? Right? And inconceivable. Inconceivable. But still, a devotee who is fully going for just serving the Supreme Lord is in this spirit that, my dear Lord, I'm not able to actually take care, right? So I'm simply placing these persons in your care. And now, I'm fully yours. And in that spirit, Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, and that is the mystery of being like kind and merciful, and yet so hard-hearted, right? To cause so much suffering to others, but it is inevitable. It is inevitable that this suffering is caused in this world, because one has to give priority to the relationship with Krishna to actually become a fully transcendental personality. Not that it's not possible for some to attain that within family life, but then the same thing will happen, is that ultimately the relationship with Krishna will overshadow any other relationship, and all these other relationships will have no more meaning. Srivas Pandit had a kirtan session in his house with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And somehow or other, one night, Lord Chaitanya could not get into the mood. He could not get into the mood of the kirtan. And he said that, what is going on? There is some disturbing element here. Srivas said, no. There's nobody here. He searched the whole house. He found his mother-in-law. He had her pulled out by the hair, right? Pulled her out by her hair and thrown outside the house. Then the kirtan could go on. What can we say? That's like, you might say, well, that was his mother-in-law. He would have never done that to his real mother, his own mother. But that is not the purport. That's not the purport. The purport is that the value system of the transcendentalists has totally changed. And Chaitanya Charitamrita is full of that. His son died during the kirtan, and all the women crying in the house, and Srivas just saying, stop making all this noise, it disturbs the kirtan. Right? You know, Lord Chaitanya is dancing in ecstasy. But our son has died. So what, you know? Let him die. We're having the Lord is doing a kirtan in our house. So stop this crying. So different value system. Again, so it is not that we should take this different value system as a condemnation of our present value system, where we are having to feel attacked. It is simply that we have to see that there is a higher value system which we should try to understand, right? And which we should try to approach with time in a natural way. That's the idea. Don't know if my answer is satisfactory. Yeah. Well, the mind is naturally is the repository of all the impressions of our material experiences. So, therefore, within the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing is all focused on these material relationships. So, it is in the mind that we are dwelling on these attachments. So this experience of strong feelings and so on may come up in the mind, and we cannot just entertain whatever the mind comes up with as and give it the priority that the mind gives it. We have to, with intelligence, look at it in the perspective of how favorable is this for going back to Godhead or for serving Lord Krishna, and then we understand its importance. Ritairitam yat pratyetena pratyeta chatmani. So we have to always, whatever happens in the mind, have to put Krishna next to it and then see the value of the mind. So again and again, when the mind is upset, we have to go through this mental, through this intellectual exercise of putting the interest of Krishna next to the emotions in our mind. And that's the exercise of ignoring the mind. So it's not just ignoring the mind, but putting the interest of Krishna next to the mind and acting for the interest of Krishna and not necessarily for the dictates of our mind. Like that essay of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Real and Apparent. My dear body and mind, for so long I have identified with all your needs and all your desires, but now I will not do this anymore. From this day on, I will only accept those dictates that are favorable for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And all the others, I will simply ignore. I have nothing to do with them. They are not mine. Real and apparent. Right? That's the gist of it. I can't quote it verbatim. The language is too complex. That's very late, actually. Yeah.
Okay. A small question. What's the use of the realization that the para atma, the parcel of Krishna, is in everybody's heart when you should be able to ignore the needs and desires of people?
But the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the Paramatma. Because we cannot trust our perception of Paramatma. Sometimes we may think it's Paramatma, but it may be the mind. You see, it's like we're not so pure that we are always in tune. So if we directly try to get in contact with Paramatma, we might make mistakes. Therefore it says the spiritual master is the external manifestation of Paramatma. And spiritual master is not one. Spiritual master is many. Diksha, Siksha, Guru. And therefore the spiritual masters, Guru Tattva, the embodiment of teachings which comes through various spiritual teachers like that. So now we cannot trust that the Paramatma will save us in every situation. We may be fooled by our mind in the name of Paramatma. I think I should stop. I just looked at my watch and it's really late. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.